This is an ABC podcast. The information provided is general in nature. For information on your individual circumstances, do seek legal advice. I love nothing better than relaxing in the backyard on a warm summer's evening, eating mangoes and breathing in the smell of my beloved freshly cut grass. What's that? Oh, that's bad. Oh, let's get inside. Ah, that's better. Having a stench around your house is awful and potentially bad for your health. So is there anything you can do about it? What are your legal rights when the air in your neck of the woods stinks? And what are your responsibilities if you're the one causing it? I'm Damien Carrick and this is Bad Neighbours. Over the next six episodes, we'll dive into common neighbour disputes like fences, surveillance cameras and water damage to find out where you stand with the law and the people next door. Smelly neighbours do actually end up in court and for some pretty odd smells.
There's been smells from industry, cats, ponies, barbecues, cigarettes and even a dead body.
Kate Offer is an adjunct associate professor at the University of WA Law School and an expert in torts law. We'll get to that dead body in a sec. But Kate says the biggest nasties in neighbourly court disputes are animals.
There was one case in New South Wales where a neighbour had nine cats. The neighbours were saying they stopped entertaining outside, they stopped letting the grandchildren play in the carport and they kept all the windows closed.
Despite all of this, the court said there wasn't enough evidence to say the odour was offensive. But how could that be? Here's Kate.
The court actually inspected the house and they smelt only fragrant candles and citrus. I think what the court took into account was the fact that they'd taken a lot of steps to try and ameliorate some of the smells.
The owner was a vet nurse who'd spent many years breeding these show cats at the same house. And she was now spending $17,000 to move the cages.
She was taking quite expensive steps to sort of modify some of the impact of the smells that the cats were making.
She really put in the work, but there's another case where a horse owner went even further to manage his pony's pong.
This involved a Shetland pony kept in a suburban backyard. His name was originally Harley and for some reason the owners inexplicably changed his name to Horse. And they'd taken some really significant steps. They'd changed his diet, which reduced the amount of his output.
His poo, his smelly
his
poo.
His poo. It reduced it by half and reduced the odour and flies. He'd trained Horse to urinate over a very specific drainage point. So again, the court used its discretion to say that Horse didn't have to be removed. And I think that seems to be one of the key issues in the way the cases have gone. If neighbours have done their best.
So if they're making an effort like reducing the output on a pony called Horse, it seems the court will look favourably on animal owners. But what if they don't make any effort at all?
There was a case involving a very small unit. One of the neighbours was keeping two very large Rottweilers in a very small yard and they were pooing and urinating in this yard that wasn't being cleaned up. And so, again, no reasonable steps were being taken. And so the owner of the dogs was ordered to remove the dogs. So somewhere in between those two extremes is probably that line.
But how does the court decide where that line is when it comes to smells?
Like many issues between neighbours, bad smells fall under the general common law of private nuisance that says you're not allowed to interfere with another person's enjoyment and use of their land. It needs to be a substantial or unreasonable interference. So in the words of an English judge in 1851, it must be more than a mere delicacy or fastidiousness and not merely according to elegant or dainty modes and habits of living.
So what's too dainty and what's actually unreasonable according to the courts?
Anything that is unpleasant, and it doesn't necessarily have to cause an injury to health. When we talk about nuisance, the key word in nuisance is reasonableness. the sorts of things that are taken into account, things like location, activity, even the loss of one night's sleep is enough to amount to a nuisance.
As infuriated as you might be at 3 a.m, I doubt anyone's going to go to court for the loss of just one night's sleep. What if you thought you smelled an animal, but it turned out to be a lot worse? In one case, Mr. Goronski, a public housing tenant, smelt something terrible that just didn't go away. And he became increasingly alarmed that he hadn't seen his neighbour Arthur, who lives with a disability, for some time.
He thought it was a dead rat under the floorboards, and it's something that had happened before. The smell got worse and worse. Landlord failed to send anyone to investigate. He said, unsurprisingly, that the smell was making him feel very unwell.
It was so bad he nearly ended up in hospital. 2 weeks after he asked the landlord to conduct a welfare check on Arthur, the police arrived on the scene.
They found that this was not a dead rat. It was unfortunately a deceased person in a flat in the same block of units.
This is a horror film. I asked Kate, did the Public Housing Authority, which was the landlord for both units, offer Mr. Goronski any compensation?
The landlord was relatively unsympathetic and said, oh, well, the tenant could have just moved out. But the tenant said, unsurprisingly, well, I don't have much money. Where would I have been able to go? So the tribunal said that for that particular period of time, that the rent was reduced.
I think it was reduced to $30 per week for 3 weeks.
For 3 weeks, yes.
Not much compensation for 3 weeks of nauseating air. Maybe Mr. Goronski could have brought a claim against the landlord in nuisance, but without him getting legal advice, we'll never know. In the case of Carden and Vallelonga, a vegan went into battle with the smell of next door's barbecue.
This is quite a notorious case and it got a lot of media attention. One neighbour was complaining, lived in a block of three bungalows and was complaining about the smells of barbecues that were being held by neighbours as well. Perhaps unfairly, it was known as the sort of the case of the backyard vegan, although the case didn't really go into the veganism at all. And there was perhaps some mean-spirited community attention on the particular plaintiff here. The plaintiff wasn't successful. Again, because having a backyard barbecue, that's deemed to be reasonable behaviour.
Cooking smells can potentially amount to a nuisance, but we live in diverse communities with an amazing array of food smells. So remember that English judge back in 1851.
It must be more than a mere delicacy or fastidiousness, and not merely according to elegant or dainty modes and habits of living.
So if you don't like the smell of next door's cuisine, legally speaking, you might not have much of a claim. But if the cooking smell is coming from a business, like a restaurant or a fast food shop, you do have more legal options.
Yep, the court did say that odours being emitted from a chicken shop could fall under the definition of a nuisance in public health,
which usually puts the responsibility with your local council. So contact them if the waft from your local food joint is making you queasy. Industry emissions are another common source of problem smells, as one community living near a foul-smelling factory discovered.
In Western Australia, there was a recent case involving the Cockburn Cement Works. Cockburn Cement makes lime from shell sand and it emits what's been described as a fairly sulphurous odour. And several neighbours complained, saying the smell was pretty overwhelming. Some said it was a very horrendous, and quite a number of them said they stopped what they were doing, they went inside.
These residents were forced indoors, unable to hang washing, watch their kids play or exercise their dogs. Now, that's a nuisance.
The court held that those odours did interfere with the neighbours' convenience, comfort, amenity. That's the words that are used when describing what is held to be a nuisance. And even though some of them were only exposed for a relatively short period of time, it was still deemed to be a nuisance and the company was convicted and fined. The onus then is on the company to find alternative ways of doing their business. Otherwise, they're going to be continually fined and continually in breach of either environmental protection laws or nuisance and or health act.
So, what should you do if a neighbour's smell is bothering you?
the first thing to do is speak to your neighbour. I would always suggest nicely if possible. The other thing I'd say is document everything. Document, document, document. Now, that's easily said, but when it comes to a smell, of course, you can't record a smell.
You can't take a photo.
You can't take a photo of a smell.
There's no smell-o-meter.
Sadly, no, and there's no app for that. But you can write it down. So always take what we'd say a contemporaneous file note. So write things down. How you would describe it, when it happened, how long it went for, things like that. Those sorts of notes are really important.
Your neighbours might also be suffering under the same stench. So again, make contact with them. Kate says there's always strength in numbers when pushing for action.
It might come from a nearby industry. If it does, you would contact your state environmental protection authority, either by phone or you might be able to lodge something online. The other great place to talk to is your local council. You might need to seek out an online dispute resolution service. You can always contact a community legal centre or a legal aid. And if there's something criminal going on, it may be worth giving the police a call as well.
And if you think you might be causing the smell, talk to your neighbours, see how it's affecting them, figure out what you can do, and take steps to reduce the impact. Okay, let's see if the smell's gone. Nah, it's still stinking out there. Damn those neighbours. Wait a minute. I think it's my bin. Let's just get that out onto the curb. Yeah. We must have the neighbours over for a coffee sometime. Next time on Bad Neighbours, what happens when your neighbour's new pool or retaining wall turns your backyard into a swamp?
He built a really large concrete swimming pool right next to our back fence. So suddenly in our backyard, where there was no issues with water, the ground was just soggy and the grass just started to die off.
Bad Neighbours is produced by Kate Lawrence. Supervising producer is Nat Penchich. I'm Damien Carrick, and to catch all our episodes, just follow The Law Report on the ABC Listen app. Catch you next time.